Welcome to Youth Speaks Out, a show by, for, and about young people. It airs on the first Sunday of each month from 3 to 4 p.m. and is hosted by young people in Mendocino County. We want to create a place where young people can talk truthfully about important issues in our lives and have a dialogue with the community of listeners. I am Jenny. I hosted Youth Speaks Out 12 times between January 2008 and June 2010 while attending Laytonville High School. I am now a student at UC Berkeley. I am joined today by
Sarah. I did a travel abroad program in India and Ghana last year.
Amber. I attend UC Santa Barbara.
And Eric. I plan on attending College Wittenberg University in Ohio.
Today our topic is, what is going on in college, activism and youth resistance? We are all enthusiastic about life at college. We are studying subjects that we really care about and that will help us develop our careers. None of us are certain about what we will be doing in 20 years, but we are accumulating tools that will offer us many options. One of the great pleasures of college is meeting other students who grew up outside of Mendocino County and have different perspectives on the world. The level of discourse is inspiring, and we learn as much from fellow students as we do in the classroom. Many students and professors are passionate about their work, both at the school and in the community. And that sense of passion can be contagious. College is valuable for developing global awareness, both social and political. Sarah, one of our hosts, has done community work in Ghana and India as a part of her studies at Leap Now through Antioch College. She will explain this in a bit. College provides many opportunities like this. Politics has always been an important topic for many college students. The political movements and actions of the 1960s are legendary. Many of you listening can probably back that up. In the past year, there have been youth demonstrations across Europe in opposition to austerity measures. The revolutions taking place in the Arab Spring involved many young people, including students. But in the United States, many see that there is an absence of the movements and demonstrations that emerged from colleges 50 years ago. The Tea Party is probably the largest movement here at this time, and it has very few members under the age of 40. We will discuss why this is happening and hope that you will join in with your ideas later on. Bruce E. Levine wrote an article called 8 Reasons Young Americans Don't Fight Back, How the U.S. Crushed Youth Resistance. Among the reasons he lists are student debt, the widespread practice of giving pharmaceutical drugs to youth for attention deficit disorder and depression, television, and normalization of surveillance. We will respond to this article that you can find at alternet.org. We hope that you will want to discuss this as well. We will begin this show by describing the general social and political climates of the colleges we attend. We will talk for 30 or 40 minutes, then we will open the phone lines for ideas, experiences, and insights. We are at the Willett Studio, and our phone number will be 707-456-9991. Let's begin with Sarah. Could you give us a picture of what you did last year and how that changed you as a young adult?
Yeah, I went to India in the fall. I traveled around. I did a lot of different service projects in different cities in India. And India, just going there was really a wake-up call, just because it's so different there, and it really gave me some perspective. It's just so intense there. It really demands your attention. It's just so many people, so crowded, so dirty. And it just really opened my eyes and made me think about things here, what things are like here. Yeah.
Before the show, you were talking about some of the problems with garbage. Mm-hmm. And how that is represents a different cultural value, represents different cultural values between the two.
Mm-hmm.
Would you like to explain some of that a bit?
Sure. Yeah. What really shocked me when I went to India was just the amount of garbage there, and just how unaware, how it just really didn't affect the people there. It just was part of their life. I just remember sitting on a train and people just throwing garbage out the window, and it just was shocking to me. I was like, what's going on? And but it just was part of their life, you know. And thinking about here and how everything is so, you know, sanitized. Well, not everywhere, but it just compared to India, it's so clean. And it makes me think about, like, where does our garbage go after it goes in the bin and goes into the garbage truck and goes away, you know? And it's just they're thinking about different things. Their values are so different there, you know? So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. To me, that almost represents Americans' materialism. I mean, me personally, even if I didn't want to be materialistic, you know, because, you know, garbage, I wouldn't want garbage everywhere. That's just how Americans were raised, you know. You don't grow up with garbage everywhere, therefore it's, you know, totally just, you know, out of the ordinary, strange, disgusting.
Right.
So.
Yeah, and it's just a part of their environment, you know. It's not something they'd look twice at.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Also, one of the things we talked about before the show, as far as young people and their compliance with the way things shouldn't be, I had mentioned, you know, the way I feel is that young kids are taught to comply in school throughout their kindergarten all the way through high school. And that goes with the fact that young people, when you're young, that's when you're learning about the world. And the thing is when you look at middle schools and a lot of elementary schools, they see that, well, they learn very quickly that the world is, you're supposed to respect authority, and that there are certain laws and certain things that you can't break, otherwise you get in trouble. And as you grow up and you start to narrow your beliefs and you get into society in high school and you learn about your place in society, it becomes even more powerful. In that there's not really much you can do, that you feel like that there's not as much you can do to change things.
Hmm.
Yeah, I know that's like one thing that was really shocking. Well, I'm not shocking, but just different about when you go off to college, like you're exposed to so many different people from different cultures. I know at UC Berkeley, like, half of the student population is from Asia, and there's a lot of international students, and so there's a lot of, like, the climate there at Berkeley and, like, the environment is just really different because it seems like there's people from all over the world, and there's a lot of out-of-state students, and even being from, like, the East Coast, like, the climate is just different here in California, and I know that, like, Berkeley always had this, you know, with protests going on in the 60s. And so at Berkeley, there's just a lot of protests that go on all the time. And the biggest are definitely for the budget cuts. And I know October 10th, 2011, there's this big protest at campus, and a lot of people went outside, and there were speakers, and a lot of graduate student instructors were speaking, and professors came out and spoke. And so the climate there, like, it seems like there's just always stuff going on, always people aware of what's going on, and protests, and there's protests with racial tension. And so the climate there is just a lot different because there's so many people from different countries.
A lot more social discomfort then.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
So we were also talking about before the show part of how student loans stops youth from, I guess, rebelling and wanting to change things. And one of the ways it does that is we mentioned that people, to go and protest at Berkeley, you have to miss classes, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, you have to miss out on your classes. So you feel like the fact that you have that you owe something to go there, that you're using a lot of your money to go to college, makes you not want to protest as much.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm sure this is the same with Amber and Santa Barbara, but, like, classes, basically, like, if you miss out on a class, you're wasting $300 of your tuition because classes are so expensive. And actually, some professors, like, I know on October 10th, a lot of professors and some of our graduate student instructors canceled class because they knew that so many people were going to be gone. So that helped. But most of the time, just students don't want to go to all these protests going on. because in Berkeley, like, there's a protest every 2 weeks or something, and so basically you're going to miss a large portion of your classes, and that's a lot of money that you paid to be in class that isn't being used.
Mm-hmm. Right, so if you're taking, like, a student debt and that, or a student loan, and you miss out on your classes, you're just basically paying back money that you took out as a loan. So there's basically no point in taking the loan in the first place, but you're in debt anyway.
Right.
So one thing I want to bring up, too, is standard testing, and how that can affect youth and their compliance with society and the way that things are going. One of the things is that for most tests, you know, like SATs and STAR testing and all that, there's a time limit. And what the time limit really does is it inspires you to be decisive. And I feel like decisiveness can be a good thing, but can also be a really bad thing, too. Like, for me, I take tests pretty slow. I think things through. And what bugs me about this is that if you're very decisive, then you have less time to think things through, and it's this decisiveness that is being taught by these tests, that you have to think quick and come to an answer or a decision quicker, really makes it so that you can't come to a really deep, well-thought conclusion as well if you don't have as much time to think on it. That's not to say that, you know, there's not situations where decisiveness would really be useful. But at the same time, you have to look at, you know, like, say, essays on the SAT. Those are timed, but creativity really is a part of writing and literature. But when you look at art and music, are those timed? No. No, those aren't timed. You can take as long as you want to make a piece of art or a piece of music, and it'll be judged on its actual final quality. It won't be judged on how long it took you. You know, if it took you a week, a day, a month later, whatever, it doesn't matter. If the final piece is a masterpiece, then people will love it. And there's lots of literature that did take a lot of time that people would love anyways. So why is it that, you know, a lot of essays and things like that should be written quicker, you know?
Yeah, I think about this. It's just our school system. It's, at least for me, like, I feel like I learn something so much more deeply when I experience it. And I feel like testing like that, it's really about memorizing quick answers, you know? Mm-hmm. And just my year that I've had was really about experiencing things. I went to India and I went to Ghana, and you just learn things so much more deeply that way. And I feel like maybe that is why youth right now in America, we're all a little bit sleepy, because we're just used to this way of learning and way of living. It's just, we are sort of fed information.
Definitely.
And that's just how we work, and it's just kind of like they're just giving us stuff, and we just, you know, we memorize dates and we write it down on the tests, and it's just, and we're just not conscious that there's any, a different way of learning. And so I feel like if there's a way we can break that mold, and find a way to go do things, and then we would be more active in what was going on.
Right. Yeah. It's like being taught makes youth more used to taking in information rather than expressing their own information or their own thoughts. So, I mean, like, I really get what you're saying. I feel like that's totally true. And I feel, you know, if you learn things for yourself and figure things out for yourself, that's a much more genuine way of learning it, you know. It's like trying to learn a lesson from someone else who went through another experience. It's you know, it's hard to learn that way. You have to, you know, do something yourself to really take something useful out of it, at least for yourself. You know, I mean, that's not to say, again, that that it may not be, you know, a significant lesson or a significant piece of information, but it becomes a lot more significant personally when you actually learn it yourself.
Yeah, also, it's like, in school, everything is so out of context, you know, like,
right.
Like math, like, I just remember, like, thinking, like, okay, when am I ever going to use algebra in the real world? You know, it's just like, this just totally doesn't, it just doesn't relate to anything, you know? And yeah. So, like, I just, if there's a way that we could that we could learn actively instead of passively, you know, I think it's just how we're learning mm-hmm. is so passive right now.
Well, I feel like maybe that's because, you know, like a lot of people who are in charge of education feel like, the youth isn't really capable of deciding where they want to go at such a young age. So they figure, well, if we teach them everything, or every you know, as much as we can, then they have the tools that they need to go forward and do other things, you know, because you can't really just assign a kid, you know, to do this or that. And at the same time, most kids don't like going to school anyways, yeah, so they're not going to...
Could you do that, though? Like, could you do that, though?
What?
If kids were, like, in control of their own education, you know?
Yeah, no, that would in a perfect world, that would be great, you know. But I mean, me personally, I don't know if, at this point, you know, kids like school enough to, you know, take control of their own education and say, I want to take this class, even though it's challenging, you know, I want to learn this topic or this subject, you know. I feel like if that were to happen today, you know, I mean, kids aren't exactly the most mature, in, you know, as far as school and learning nowadays. So mm-hmm. people would probably just choose mostly easy classes and say, oh, this is cool, you know. And then when they get out to the real world, you know, they're going to have to use, you know, what knowledge that they took from those easy classes rather than, you know, taking classes that they actually respected. And maybe it would be like more like college, you know, where you could choose something that you're actually interested in and apply that to something useful.
Well, actually, it kind of depends on youth. It depends on the different groups of youth. It depends on if the youth is really exposed to getting free education and having adults tell you, this is what you need to do, this is what you need to take. And right. then, and...
It become a personal issue.
Yeah, and internationally speaking, some kids really want to utilize their education, and they want to go forward, and they're curious about the world.
Mm-hmm.
But... I have to agree with Amber where just for me, like in high school, yeah, like math didn't really pertain to what I thought the real world was, or like, I don't know, other subjects. But for me, like math was just so beautiful because everything just fit together, and just to have that knowledge, like I'd be really, really sad if math was eliminated because it wasn't used in the world. I mean, it is used in the world, but for a lot of people, just the fact that, like, I'm going into rhetoric and Middle Eastern studies, and so I don't have to take math anymore. But it's kind of sad knowing that there's so much knowledge out there that I'll never be able to, like, take a hold of just because it's not what I'm learning. It's just sad to know that there's so much stuff out there that a human can't possibly be able to learn every single thing.
Mm. So. Yeah. Well, I totally think that math is relevant. I just wish that I totally do. But just I think that if teachers could teach it in a way that we feel that it's relevant, you know what I mean?
Like you used the word passive at one point too.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's really interesting. So like it's really easy to forget about like things that you want to change because it's hard and you know like nobody has done it successfully. It's been made out of place, you know, like, as far as, like, learning, like you mentioned math, you know, like, it's important in daily life, but, you know, it's, like, it's hard to, like, you know, apply it to, like, daily life, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. It seems like it's important for some things, but, like, it's hard to, like, change things so that it'll be a choice to make it, you know, because it's been so established that we use it in everyday life.
Right.
Or that we use it in high school, that we teach it to everybody, you know. It's like, how would you change it so that it would work and that people could, you know, decide what they want to learn?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, now that we're all out of high school and we have, like, that ability to, just because college is really flexible in that, you can choose your own major, and I know that at, like, UC Davis, like, you can build your own, or not, it's not build your own major, it's, like, create your own major, and so I'm just curious what your personal goals are for this year, and, like, Eric, you're just about to start college, and, like, Amber and Sarah and I have already, like, completed, like, a year of being out of high school, so I'm just curious what, like, your goals are for this your personal goals are for this year?
Mm-hmm. Well, me personally, I'd actually like to get a time slot on the radio for a radio station in Ohio. This is because I believe localization would be important, and I maybe would want to broadcast that over there, and especially in an area, Ohio, where it's very industrial and very much based on things things happening outside of the state rather than in the state. And I feel like that would really help people gather together and solve issues that are actually important.
My personal goals, it's funny, it's kind of relevant to this topic. I feel like youth is kind of simmered down since the past couple of decades, just because there's multiple reasons why youth doesn't feel like they want it or they need to change anything. They're just kind of going through the motions. And what I want to do is to volunteer with kids and help teach youth more in a more critical thinking way, and to just get them to think outside the box and to think of new ideas and be a little bit more innovative about their world. Yeah.
Well, during my travels last year, I really I got to work at an orphanage in Ghana, and I really fell in love with kids, and so I'm really excited about working more with them and just, I want to work with kids. That's what I want to do. How about you, Jenny?
For me, just being able to understand other cultures better. And like I said, I'm studying Middle Eastern studies, and just to be able to know different cultures. And then I'm also, I'm doing an internship at, it's called the East Bay Sanctuary Covenant. And basically we write petitions for asylum for a lot of families or individuals who have fled their country. So I worked with two young women who were a few years older than me who fled from Guatemala and Honduras, and just being able to understand, like, not only their personal stories, why they fled, but also why their countries are, just how their country works and why so many people are afraid of going back, and just becoming more globally aware and just knowing and being able to understand different cultures, because I feel like we're very fortunate to live in a culture where we're kind of protected and we're able to have all these rights, where a lot of third world countries or just different countries around the world don't have that option. So that's a personal goal for me. And it's inspiring too, to be able to be in a place where there are so many different people. And I just, whenever I think of Middle Eastern studies, I just remember this one time. It was after it was during the turmoil in Egypt and Libya, and I remember walking to class, and there in Berkeley there's this gate called Sather Gate, and it's like it used to be the entrance to UC Berkeley, and now it's just a structure. But I remember walking to class and seeing a lot of my Middle Eastern peers lying on the ground, and it looked like they were bloody, and it looked like they were just hurt, and their clothes were torn, and I was like, what is going on? And then I saw these other people and marching around them. And it was a demonstration, and it was just really, I can't say inspiring, but it was very, like, it was scary just walking past, and they were protesting or just raising awareness, and just to be able to be in a place where that's going on, and it was just so real. And I just remember looking down, and I saw my friend Omar, and I was like, what is he doing? And, like, why is he bloody? And, of course, I mean, he wasn't bloody, but it was just very eye-opening. I mean, I wasn't in the Middle East, but just to see that happening on campus was pretty cool.
Right. Just so some of the listeners know, like, why it is I want to do what I want to do, here's sort of what I believe. Actually, it is what I believe. I believe that groups of people, more specifically different age groups, want things to work a certain way, and that's a bit of a generalization, but it comes from the fact that different age groups have gone through different things, and similar things, would make you believe more similar things. And it just so happens that rebellions of older generations or uprisings such as, you know, Vietnam, have rendered them defenders of what the youth today is against. And this goes with the fact that the older generations have tried to discourage the youth from doing it. And they've cleverly done this. Found ways to discourage the youth from becoming strong enough to change government laws, local laws, and likely many other things significantly. And what I want to do on the radio is maybe give the youth more power to change things. What I also believe is that if discomfort is more powerful than our apathy, change happens. So what happens, what exactly makes our apathy more powerful? And though that's an oxymoron, a little bit, I mean, apathy, you know, it's the opposite of power. But to make our apathy less powerful, I feel like people need to have a bit of encouragement to want change. And I feel like maybe being on the radio or somehow otherwise using media to reach out to youth specifically to, you know, have enough power and have less apathy so that they have more discomfort with the way things are and so that they can actually change things more. Because the way it is now, I almost feel like the needs of youth or the desires of youth aren't necessarily as much respected as they should be because of the way things have been for a while, because youth hasn't really been educated as much as they should be in the way that the world works and the way that even their local society works. You know, I mean, how much youth really knows about the way government works or the way that local government works or who's in local governments or what they believe in, how it operates. I feel like even just educating in that, educating them about that, those sorts of things would really open their eyes and maybe give them their own opinion about what they want in the world rather than just accepting the way things are and not really seeing past what they wouldn't have to research or gather information on their own.
Yeah, what I think about when you say that is, you know, there are passionate young people right now. Like, I mean, like the four of us, like we're excited and involved. And like, just like hearing about the protest at Berkeley, that just gets me so excited. Like mm-hmm. that we're like, I feel like we're at this point, like all this really intense stuff is going on in the world. And like, it's sort of up to our generation,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I feel like it's just, if we could wake up, like I think we're up to the challenge, you know.
Yeah.
I don't feel hopeless about it, you know. And I feel like a lot of people have sort of been like, this is just an awful time to live. All this terrible things are happening. The youth, like,
yeah.
we're not.
I definitely
making a stance, you know. But we can.
Yeah.
We can do it.
I definitely don't disagree with you. You know, I think it's great what's happening at Berkeley. You know, all the protests and stuff. But the thing is that's not happening everywhere, you know,
mm-hmm.
it's, I mean, like we even talked about this on the show, you know, like it's not completely up to Berkeley, to do all of the protests, you know, it's like when you have a protest so often, like how often did you say the protests were, Jenny? Like,
oh, well, okay. The big protests aren't this often, but there are a lot of small protests. I would say like once every 1 or 2 weeks
right.
on campus. And then there are also protests off campus that are affiliated with Berkeley students.
Yeah, so I mean, like, I feel like maybe that the fact that there's, like, so many might neutralize it a little bit, and if we got more protests happening in other areas of the country, you know, it wouldn't be just such a localized effort saying, you know, just from Berkeley saying, oh, they want change, you know, like, maybe we'll throw in an effort, you know, if you get, like, people in the Midwest and the East Coast doing it too, and you get everybody involved with it, then we'd say, oh, well, we really have an issue here, maybe we should actually do something about it. And I feel like, you know, Ohio doesn't really, you know, where I'm going, obviously, doesn't really have that much discomfort with the way things are going. You know, they,
mm-hmm.
I really want to, you know, inspire, you know, not necessarily inspire discomfort, but educate people so that they know what's going on and so that they have discomfort with things that they should have known about in the first place.
Like mm-hmm. Sarah said earlier, wake up.
Yeah, mm-hmm. exactly. Just wake up, you know, see what's right in front of you.
One thing that, just talking about our generation, I just remembered this, and I thought it was really interesting, where I was taking it's called ISF, Interdisciplinary Studies Field Class,
And it was after Bin Laden had been captured and all that stuff. And I remember that Berkeley didn't really have, like, I mean, I don't want to call it a celebration because I feel like it's horrible to celebrate someone's death, although in this case, you know, America felt different. But just, like, Berkeley didn't really have, like, a celebration. But I know a lot of other campuses did. And my professor said, like, he said something that was really interesting. He said the reason why young people are doing that is because, you know, Bin Laden emerged as this, quote, bad man when we were 9 or 10 years old. So practically he was like the boogeyman our entire life, whereas our parents' generation has dealt with all these different bad people in America. And so for this boogeyman to be defeated was like this triumph. And so, you know, people who, our generation, you know, like 19, 20, finally felt like this boogeyman of their childhood was, like, defeated. And so our generation just has, like, this totally different perspective on things. And I thought that was interesting, that just different generations, just in a matter of 10 years, can really have a different perspective of things.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just very interesting when he said that, and the whole class was like, oh, wow, like, that makes a lot of sense. So,
yeah, I mean, like, we grew up, like, I don't really remember 9/11 that well. You know, we were 10. Like, I don't remember being sad about it, because really, I mean, I could tell that my parents were upset, but I didn't really know what was going on. And it's just, like, it's just interesting to be, like, this huge thing happened, you know, but it's just part of our childhood.
I mean, and I also think that it has a lot to do with where we were. I mean, California, like, when we're 10, you don't really, I mean, personally, for me, like, I didn't really have a concept of, like, how far away it was, but also, it's in the same country, and I know that I was talking to my best friend, my best friend in college a few months ago, and he's from, like, southern New Jersey, and he said that he remembers it so well, just because, like, he would go into New York City all the time, and, like, it was just for him, like, that was something that, like, everybody remembered. He remembered, like, sitting there in the classroom and, like, the teacher, and it was just a big thing. And, I mean, it was a big thing here, too, but just to be so close to it, I think, brought a lot of awareness.
I like how you mentioned, you know, how, like, it's different for the older generations than it is for the younger generations. I think that topic really plays into another reason why, you know, it's so wrong that older generations may be trying to you know, suppress or oppress our different beliefs, maybe, or our different protests, because really the United States, if you think about it, is based on rebellion and based on change. You know, that's what really democracy is. You know, it's the young people, they have a different opinion, then they vote, and then things change. You know, that's like the progress of democracy, and, you know, changing that really, you know, like, making it so that, you know, youth can't change things, that's really almost, really, actually, that is against what the United States was founded on and based on. You know, it's based on democracy, which means it's what the people want. And the youth is the new population, you know, or the new upcoming population. And if that's what they want, that's pretty much the way that it's, you know, eventually going to be, no matter how, you know, no matter what your efforts are.
Right. I feel like the older generations have put in different ways to suppress the younger generation of, you know, the revolution, as you said, of why they don't fight back. And there's several reasons. And one large one is student loan debt. I mean, you can't really... There's a very select few people of a group of people that can't or that can actually pay all the way through college, and almost everyone just goes through the motions of getting a student loan, and then as soon as you move out of your parents' house, you just get this huge responsibility of being a parent or an adult, and you have all these bills that you have to pay off all of a sudden, and what do you think about that?
About the changes that happen so suddenly?
Yeah. Because, I mean, a while ago, we had, tuition didn't even exist.
Yeah. I don't know. I think it's a lot to be thrown at you. But the other thing is, though, too, is that I feel like it's a path set out for people, you know, especially the youth, you know. The specific path is just, you know, you obviously have to go through your elementary school, go through your middle school, go through your high school, and however successful you are at that determines, you know, how you, pretty much what college you go to and really how well you do in college for the same reason. And, you know, once you get out of college, then you have this massive debt typically, unless, you know, you did really good in high school and you got to college for free, which doesn't happen very often anyways. And then once you've finished with your debt, actually even while you're paying your debt, you typically will get an internship, and then once you get your internship done, then you go get your job. Then once you get your job, then you look for your promotion. Then once you get all the promotions that you wanted in the first place, you might even want to get more. If you ever do get those more, then you look forward to retiring, you know. And really what it is it's like this never-ending ladder to happiness that society has created. And I feel like that's a bit unfair, you know, and I think that there's a lot of subconscious discomfort among the youth with the way that the system, you know, has it working. But the thing is it's so hard. It's a catch-22, like I said earlier, or I don't know if I mentioned catch-22, but the fact is it's so hard to break that because you have to play into the system to break the system. You have to be successful and get enough money to advertise, unless, you know, you can get on the radio or do something like that, which is pretty much what I want to do. My goal, you know, really is to figure out a way to break the cycle without playing into the cycle. You know, I don't want to have to, you know, like play into the way that everybody wants to live, you know, not because not for the sole reason that I just don't want to, you know, be mainstream, but more for the fact that I want to live life the way that I feel like I should, you know, rather than playing into this system, you know. Like, if it was up to me, you know, like, I like the idea of college, I really do, it's great, you know, get higher education, learn more stuff, I love the idea. But the thing is I just don't like the whole system that they've created with, you have to go or you won't be successful. And there's really that idea really does go around a lot, and I feel like there's not, like, there's some youth discomfort with that, but the reward of being successful is so powerful that people don't have enough discomfort with the reasons why it's wrong to make a difference in that.
Yeah, and what is, I mean, yeah, you're successful if you make money. Like, I still, that's, I just,
well,
I
not every know. Not everybody believes that, definitely. I certainly don't believe that. I'm not sure if any of us really do believe that. But it's a part of, you can't deny that that's materialism, and making money is a big part of American culture. You know, like I even mentioned at one point before the show, you know, it's like, and this goes along with the whole catch-22 thing, is that you have to, you know, be materialistic yourself. You know, like, if you have to present yourself with a nice suit, you know, if you want to, like, look clean, you know, you can't just live, you know, with long hair and, or in, like ratty clothes and, like, go into, like, a job interview for, like, a business firm and expect to do well. You know, it doesn't work well, you know, and even though if that's the way that you wanted to live, that's just part of, playing into, American culture, you know. That's part of what you do. You get a nice suit and you have to look all clean cut. And, you know, as much as I'm, you know, against being materialistic, that's, you know, it's part of getting a good job and being successful and climbing that whole, happy social ladder that society has laid out for the youth.
Yeah. And I mean, just going back to what Amber said with the student loan debt, that was just, it's just because we have so much pressure and just like, oh, we have to work and work and work to pay off this debt. I think that that's a lot of, like, I agree with this article where it has crushed the youth resistance in a way, just because our minds are just so molded to, like what Eric said, just doing this cycle of just studying, working, studying, working, studying, working, studying, working, and just, it's just difficult. And then I know that just to go out and protest, like, you're going to miss class, it's expensive, and I know a lot of the time, like, during protests, there's just this feeling that, like, oh, well, all of my peers, all of my classmates are going to this protest. That means that I can go to the library, I can study for the 3 hours that my classmates are gone, and maybe I can, you know, outsmart them on this test, or I can finish studying and just, like, set the curve on this test. And so I think that it's just because the world is so competitive, it's hard to think of a group of people, and it's just easier to think about yourself sometimes, yeah. Which is sad, but it is true.
It's like, they, you know, I feel like I've been taught to, you know, respect being successful so much more, so it's a lot easier to be apathetic about things that, you know, may even matter more to me, like changing the way people think, or maybe, you know, changing certain aspects of culture. And it's really impossible to do that with one person, because, you know, to change culture, it requires the different, you know, the opposed thinking of probably the majority of the people. I don't see, you know, a minority of people changing it. And the thing is if enough people knew about it and weren't apathetic about it and had enough discomfort, then they could change it, you know. But how do you inspire that in other people? I mean, like I said, you know, I feel like educating them about things would, you know, be a good start.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'm sort of going back to this, but, like, the idea of what is success.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I feel like, okay, so American society is sort of like, we're on this idea of, like, we're going towards happiness, which is what exactly, which is getting a good job and having a family and retiring.
Well, exactly. Yeah, that's exactly right? My idea, because it's so unclear.
It's unclear. It's unclear to me, and it's kind of, like, if I think about it, like, that is sort of what the American dream is, and it's intimidating to think of that as, like, a 19-year-old, to be like, okay, my life is planned out, and I feel like what value is living and enjoying what you're doing, and so, like, having stress with loans and having stress with school, like, I just...
Like, that shouldn't happen, like, that's just unnatural.
That shouldn't be happening, really, you should be experiencing what you're doing. Like, you should be going to that protest instead of worrying about,
exactly,
wait, missing this class because it's going to cost this money, you know? It's just,
yeah,
you know, you should be doing what is important to you.
Yeah,
you know?
It's like, what other way is there to live other than that? And, mm-hmm, you know, it's like, you know, like, personal success, like you said, you know, would be like your own happiness, finding what you love doing. But it's like, mm-hmm, you know, to keep yourself sustainable, you know, to sustain your lifestyle, it's like you have to follow into that system, you know. And it's like you're born into it too, you know. You're born in America, you know, the values and the morals and everything that Americans rely on. And it's like, if you want to maintain those, then you have to, you know, you have to follow that system.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, who's going to be willing to try and change that, you know? Who's willing to, you know, attempt to basically change culture, you know, change our values?
Let's do it, guys.
So there is a lot of other reasons in this article by Bruce E. Levine. And Bruce E. Levine... I'm sorry. So the second reason was psychopathologizing and medicating noncompliance. I'm sorry, I mispronounced that. Number three, schools that educate for compliance and not for democracy. Four, the, quote, no child left behind and, quote, race to the top. Five, shaming young people who take education but not their schooling seriously. And I thought that was interesting. Six, the normalization of surveillance. Seven, television. And eight, fundamentalist religion and fundamentalist consumerism. And just going back to number five, shaming young people and who take education but not their schooling seriously, there's this part says, Mark Twain famously said, quote, I never let my schooling get in the way of my education. End quote. Towards the end of Twain's life in 1900, only 6% of Americans graduated high school. Today, approximately 85% of Americans graduate high school, but this is not good enough for Barack Obama, who told us in 2009, quote, and dropping out of high school is no longer an option. It's just not quitting on yourself. It's quitting on your country. And, you know, this quote is really interesting because it does, it, you know, like, what is the difference between schooling and education? And is education, like, what you learn in school, or is it what you learn outside of school?
Learn on your own, like, and all that.
Yeah, I feel like education is just your experiences. It can be, like, inside and outside of the classroom. I mean, like, perfect example, Sarah, who went to India, she got lots of experience, like, globally. And she got education without schooling. I feel like schooling is just an institution where you're just, you're going through the motions, and you're just, people are feeding you information.
Right.
And then you just, you know, you learn the quick answers, and then usually it just falls out of your brain pretty quickly.
Right. You know, like, the whole thing with the No Child Left Behind Act thing, I'm actually a bit semi against that, because, you know, it, you know, like, if a child is, you know, quote, left behind, or, you know, however you may put that, that may put them in a position to be able to change things, because they see things differently than, you know, the mainstream child would. You know, the typical child would see the world, because, you know, each child is taught pretty much the same thing. You know, it's like you have one teacher teaching all these kids the same thing. Well, maybe you have one kid that, you know, gets a different idea or a different perspective. He does bad on a test, maybe because he questions things and thinks differently. Yet, you know, it's like, that's looked on as a bad thing because he gets good grades, when really you can't, you know, like, maybe there is a kid who gets bad grades because he's just not paying attention, but, you know, maybe there's another reason behind it. You know, you can't generalize why a kid's getting bad grades, especially, you know, when it's elementary school, because those grades are pretty trivial to some degree. I mean, they can determine a lot of things about how they grow up and who they turn into, but I mean, you know, the whole No Child Left Behind thing really can, you know, deter a child from, you know, separating themselves from mainstream society, maybe even making a good change.
Yeah, that kind of brings the number two reason, psychopathologizing and medicating noncompliance.
Mm-hmm.
It's really funny because we were talking about ODD, which is oppositional defiant disorder, which I'd never heard of before. I've heard of ADHD before, and there's tons of kids that are getting medicated for that, and I feel like it's just a way of kind of putting kids in this one category, sort of, not giving them the ability to think outside of the box, or, you know, thinking, why does this happen, or what's the reason for this?
Yeah, I mean, these are all really interesting, and I know that there are a few callers who have been trying to call in. So we're going to open the phone lines now. The phone number is 456-9991. I can see a caller right now, so caller, you're on the air. Caller, you're on the air.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
This is Robert from out here west of Willis. I just would like to commend you. You are sounding like all of you are very compassionate people, and it's just so wonderful that young people are compassionate. And the other thing is the idea of learning to learn. You know, I didn't quite make it through UC Berkeley. I was there for a while, but I did learn to learn. that serves me to this very day. And the other thing is, protest, it takes time, and it takes a lot of mental energy and spiritual energy, but if it's done as a form of loving, it's worthwhile, and it's part of your education, and, you know, you don't just go out there to be TO'd, and, you know, it's part of learning to love in a larger way, so that's just the three things I wanted to add. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Robert.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Now, he mentioned that, what is it, protest is a lifestyle. I like that idea.
Yeah.
I think that could be important.
Yeah. Just, I mean, really, it seems like there's violent protests, there's nonviolent protests. And the nonviolent protests are the ones that really get through to people, I feel, because when...
Not hypocritical.
When you're... When you're out there, like, destroying, what was it, there's this one building and people faced it and they drew on it and graffiti vandalized. I mean, you're really just
Disrespecting
it. You're downgrading yourself in what you're protesting for. So that was a good point.
Hmm. You keep your maturity in what you do, really.
Yeah. So, Sarah, like, for your Leap Now program, it's just because you went so many different places. Like, could you describe, like, what that program is? Because we're all going to, you know, four-year colleges, but your program is just so different.
Yeah, sure. Last year I did this program called Leap Year. It was a 9-month program, and I got college credit for it. And I did 3 months traveling and doing all sorts of different volunteering projects in India. And I traveled with a group. And then second semester in the spring, I got to choose my internship anywhere in the world, and I got to go work at an orphanage in Ghana. I was working with 18 babies, and it was really intense. I was the only white woman in this little tiny village, and just was a really amazing experience. And I just remember I would talk to my peers on the phone, you know, like when I was in Ghana, and we'd just be like, I can't believe this is college. This is the best college ever. Because, like, we were really out in the world doing things, you know, and we were really doing things that we were passionate about. And I definitely know now that I am going to be working with children for the rest of my life, because I got this amazing experience with the babies at the orphanage. It just blew my mind. I should advertise for Leap Now, is the organization I went through. They're really amazing.
They have, like, a website? Was it leapyear.org?
Leapnow.org.
Leapnow.org.
Yeah.
And I feel like a lot of people, like, they don't know that option. I mean, you know that, like, in college you can study abroad, but they don't know that, like, there's organizations that'll do that, like, right after high school.
Mm-hmm.
So that was leapnow.org.
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 By the way, we are still accepting callers. The number is, 456-9991.
Yeah. We have time for one or two more calls. Just about over.
Yeah. Sarah, so you've mentioned that you want to work with youth as a career, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or sometime later in your life. Was it Leap Now, the program that made you want to do it, or did you already want to do it before?
Well, I've always loved kids, but it was really great to sort of be able to go explore that, and instead of going to college and taking a child development class, which is great too. I really got to have experience with kids and actually find out, and I was doing a real thing, a real service, you know, something that was really meaningful. And I got to do that right away, which was really exciting.
So it really strengthened your interest then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, I can't say that I'd... I love kids too, you know? But I feel like the base of the people I really would want to work with is, you know, like young adults, more like teenagers, 18-year-olds, you know? Like pretty much, you know, college-age people, because I feel like those are the people... who would be the most likely to take interest in things that, you know, are worth protesting,
mm-hmm.
you know, such as, like, you know, UC Berkeley and all that, like. But while we're on the subject of protests, Jenny, have you been in any protests?
Yeah, I was in the budget cut protest, which was, like, the biggest protest mm-hmm. on October 10th. And that was, I mean, it was really just thrilling, almost, walking with a bunch of people, and we all wore, like, red bracelets, and just, I mean, some parts, like, I didn't really agree with, like, we barged in on the biggest library on campus, and people were studying, and that was, I was like, oh, well, okay, like, whatever. But, yeah, it was a little dramatic, but just being a part of a big protest was really thrilling, and you could see all your peers holding up signs, and... besides that, I haven't been in many other protests, but there's a caller. So, caller, you're on the air. Caller, you're on the air.
I wanted to say that in my estimation, and I I think Mark Twain was making this point in what he said, that schooling is where you go and you do that boring algebra and the cubicle people stuff where anybody could do it if they basically learn by rote what's going on with that. Education is going to that protest and balancing between those two things, along with everything else, and learning to be an adult is really what going to college, from my perspective when I went, was what it was all about.
Mm-hmm.
And, if people don't go to those protests, what's going to happen with the budget? It's just going to skyrocket. So there has to be some kind of balance. And maybe what we did, maybe you guys can do this probably easier with cell phones and stuff. Somebody recorded the classes, and we would listen later after the protest and fill in the blank or share notes or whatever it took to do that, and still did the protest. You mentioned Ohio. When at the beginning of the 70s, Kent State in Ohio, four students were shot there because of protesting and the anti-war event. And I would suggest that you study what happened there. Crosby, Stills, and Nash, actually Neil Young of that group, wrote a song. They immediately went to the studio and got it on the air on radio stations within a few days. It was called Ohio. And it was about the four students who got shot. And I think it's a really important lesson to learn about that time and fighting what's going on with the political factions that have now taken what we fought for back then and eroded it away. And this happens over and over on in the generations, and takes a generation or two to get back to that point. So it's your turn, it's your future, and don't let them take that away from you. Two questions for you guys, quickly. The most amazing, unexpected thing that happened to you in your college experience that you never would have thought would have happened, and what has youth radio done for your college experience that without it might not have been as easy? And thanks for the great show. Best of luck to you in your future and in college.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Shocking things that happened during... Well, for me, I mean, I don't really have any shocking college stories, but it took a turn of events, and I decided to be involved with different cultures, and just in my internship, everything is in Spanish, and the people I was working with, they spoke like the local Indian dialect in like Guatemala, and just being able, it was just very hard to just, it was just shocking to have to work with people who not only did they not speak, I mean, my Spanish isn't perfect, and so to just have to work together, and I mean, that was pretty shocking to me. Not shocking, but just, that was the interesting highlight of my year.
Yeah.
And meeting new people that I, just different cultures, was just cool. What about you guys?
I haven't, attended college yet, but I mean, I'm hoping that I can at least, inspire shocking experiences in college with a radio show or something like that.
Yeah, for me, was really just, everything was sort of shocking to get out of my little Willits world, I mean, India is a big difference from Willits, and just being there, and I remember one of the very first days, the most shocking thing for me was there's this little boy who was... that tugged on my clothes and was asking me for money, and he followed me for like three blocks, I think, and just pulling on my clothes, and just, that has never happened to me before, and it was just such a scary, amazing experience, and I don't know if amazing was an eye-opening experience.
Yeah.
That they're so openly needy that they'll just come
up to
you.
Yeah, it's just so different, so... That's my college experience, I guess. Shocking.
Yeah, I can't really say that I had any shocking experiences. I guess living in UC Santa Barbara, you feel like you're in this safe bubble because it's so beautiful there and it's paradise and everything is perfect. But one night that stood out to me, it was a Saturday night, I believe, and someone actually got shot on street, and there's a lot of people that walk out on the streets and stuff during parties and stuff, and he got airlifted to the hospital, and he was really badly injured, but I'm not quite sure how that turned out, but it was just, like, shocking to me. It's like, oh, the world is here, too. Like, it's not this perfect utopia.
Yeah.
So, unfortunately, that's all for this month's edition of Youth Speaks Out. Your hosts today have been me, Jenny, and...
Sarah.
Amber.
And Erd.
Thanks to our callers. One of the purposes of the show is to involve the community in dialogue, so your call-ins are important to us. We're happy to have been able to broadcast from the Willett Studio. Youth Speaks Out is produced in cooperation with the Safe Schools Healthy Starts Bronco Project, building resiliency opportunities for the North County. For more information about the Bronco program, please call Pat Sanborn at 459-5314 or email at PSANBORN@MCOE.US. Youth Speaks Out is produced and directed by Dan Roberts, who may be reached by mail at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California, 95490, or through the website www.youthspeaksout.net. There you can find out more information about the project, get addresses for contacting us, get a copy of the show, and listen to many hours of previous programs and streaming audio. The views expressed on this program are not necessarily those of KZYX. They are the views of those who express them. Our next show will be on the first Sunday of September the 4th at 3:00 p.m. Thanks for listening, and we will see you in September.